Welcome to FinTech's DEI Discussions podcast series. This is the Women of FinTech chapter, and we are here today to celebrate the wins, raise awareness of the challenges, and walk the talk for change across the entire financial technology industry. Today, I'm super excited because we are joined by Oya Çelik-Temel, Sales Director at Jacobi Asset Management. She is here today in the studio to share how she walks the talk for change in our sector and what more she wants done for inclusion. Welcome. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit more about your role at Jacobi.
So my role is sales director at Jacobi. That's pronounced Jacobi, not Jacobi. But I made that mistake, you know, about 3 months into the job, so it's fine. And I've been there for about a year. Technically, my job is sales, but I'll explain a little bit about what Jacobi does. So Jacobi issued Europe's first Bitcoin ETF in August on Euronext Amsterdam. So it's a very exciting place to be. We're pioneers in the space. So this means that my job ends up being a lot more than sales, because we have an instrument that's kind of a bridge between traditional finance and digital assets. I spend a lot of my time educating people on what crypto is, what blockchain is, how you would go about investing in it, what the risks are, and things like that. So I would say it's sales by way of education.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. And I would love for you to give us an overview of your career to date as well, please.
Yeah, so I started in 2006 at a company called Lehman Brothers, which some of you may have heard of. Mm. And I was working on a product called collateralized debt obligations, which is kind of really in the eye of the storm, you know, the company that brought on the global financial crisis and the instrument that was at the crux of it. So it was a very exciting place to start one's career straight out of uni. And I was there up until the bankruptcy and a little bit after. And after the bankruptcy, I unsurprisingly couldn't find another job in the same field, because CDOs were by then a defunct instrument. So I went back to school. I did my master's in applied maths, focusing on cryptography. And then after school, I went back to banking, predictably. So I spent many more years at big American banks, Jefferies first, and then most recently Morgan Stanley, where I was until 2021. And then everyone sort of was talking about Bitcoin at the time. A lot of my clients were asking about it. You know, the bank wouldn't really touch it, but you know, I kind of brushed up on my notes from school and learned more about blockchain technology, cryptography, how Bitcoin actually works. And yeah, so I decided to pursue a career in digital assets full time. And I joined a company called Copper, who was doing crypto custody for institutions. And I was there for a year and a half, which is in crypto a very long time. So saw through the demise of FTX. And then I joined Jacobi in February 2023. And now I've kind of embarked on a first startup journey of my career. And I feel I finally found balance where I can satisfy my intellectual curiosity in a fast-paced environment, maybe a little too much with crypto, and just be part of the change.
Mm. So this is super exciting, your background in banking and now working within startup. What have you seen in terms of the differences?
It's polar opposite. So banking is a lot more structured day to day. So you are given a clear job description, you're given lines that you're not allowed to color outside of. You know more or less what each day is going to be like. You know who to ask for questions and who to go to for solutions. So it's very predictable. You have a clear career trajectory as long as, you know, you perform up to the standards, and they help you perform with the tools in big companies like performance reviews, constant feedback from managers, and they just help you up that corporate ladder and you become, you know, part of the cog. It's very satisfying. You kind of enjoy that predictability. You have a big support system. There's a lot of people, a lot of different departments, so you can maybe change gears a little bit slightly. But you kind of lose sight of what it is you want out of your career. You probably get financial satisfaction, you know, you might be trying new things, but you just get stuck in this safe road, which is not really a bad thing. But for me, I found I wanted something more. You know, I had all this education, which I wasn't using, fine. But what I enjoyed about having studied maths and applied maths was kind of the creativity and, you know, the thinking outside the box aspect of it. And startups are a lot more like that. They're a lot messier than banks, more exciting, a lot faster paced. You have to keep trying, failing, keep trying again, failing again. So you have to be a lot more resilient, and it might not work, but it ends up forcing you to think of things in creative ways, because by definition, a startup is something that no one's done before. So you have to come up with a solution, and no one's telling you this is the recipe of how to do it. So it's very different. I don't think it's for everyone. I don't think it would have been for me 10 years ago, but yeah, now I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
I really like how you've spoken about resilience and just the definition of a startup means it hasn't been done before. And that in itself is a sort of mindset that you have to go into it with. I know that you faced a number of challenges that you have been super resilient in overcoming within your career. I'd love you to share some of them with us.
I think the first thing was the Lehman bankruptcy. It wasn't really a challenge I faced. I mean, it affected millions of people. But I think that was a big shock, because I went into banking thinking, okay, I'm set for life. I'm going to be at this bank or another bank for, you know, the rest of my career, retire in my 50s and learn how to play golf. But 3 years in, this thing happens, and then I can't easily find something else. It really kind of forced me to think about, what do I really want out of my career? You know, where do I go from here? And it was challenging, because everyone else I had started at the same time with, who were at other banks, were kind of progressing into up that career ladder, whereas I was kind of stuck, you know, doing my master's, which I enjoyed, but I was always conscious of the fact that I was falling behind. And it took me a long time to recover from that and realize, you know, that's why am I so stuck on this idea of, you know, being at a certain level by a certain age. And it teaches you to think about what you actually do enjoy in your career rather than where you think you should be. So that was kind of a big defining event. And then specific examples in terms of what I found challenging, one would say it was discussion around pay. Always, you know, even after 15 years, I always found it, probably still would find it, difficult to talk about pay. And I think every female colleague I had spoken to had the same experience. You know, we would say, how would you go about asking for a raise, or what you should expect for your bonus? And they were all, I don't know. Like, we don't know. And several attempts I'd made to speak to a manager or even head of a department, it was kind of quickly shut down as, you know, you're getting a fair salary, or, you know, this is in line with your peers, and you just say, oh, okay, thank you, and move on. It's all very opaque, and it's, I think the culture doesn't make it easier for you to ask about it, but it's not like, you know, you're asking for something extreme. So I feel that's a challenge. I became a mother for the first time in 2018, and I was the only person in my team who had a child. And I was working in a bank in a client-facing role. I would be at work at 8, leave at 6, 6:30. So by the time I got home, it would mean 7:30, where my child would be asleep. Which, if you can afford childcare and arrange the logistics, it was fine. But it meant that I never got to see her. And it was kind of a conversation that no one had had before. So I mean, spoke to my manager, he spoke to his manager, he spoke to his manager, and there was this whole debate about it. And in the end, you know, we got an arrangement where I could work from home one day a week, leave early on certain days, but it just was very complicated to make it work. You know, we got a trial period, everyone signed the document. It just wasn't easy to have a solution that would result me in having a balanced life between home and work. So I think we've come a little bit since then with COVID and flexible working, but I think there's still a long way to go in terms of normalizing parenting at work.
Mm. And I really appreciate you sharing that, because I think there'll be many, many parents, many caregivers that story will have pulled on their heartstrings. Certainly for me, I totally relate to that. And just, you know, hearing that this person had to sign it off, that person had to sign it off, and all you got in the end was one day working from home. Like, saying that to any mother of a 1, 2, 3 year old, it's, you know, well, any year old, that's very difficult. What do you think that we need to do as an industry to become more active in championing inclusion? And I know part of that, a huge part of that for you, is supporting next generation of talent too.
I think one, I would say, and this is going to sound maybe a bit reverse minded, but highlighting less when someone is a woman. Now we see all these, panel of women and whatever, women in ETFs, or, you know, here's a women's breakfast or something, you know, just why not call it breakfast, or, you know, a panel on ETF experts without, and just have them all be women and not mention that they're all women. So I think it's, I don't know why it started to bug me, but about a year ago it started to bug me. Everyone was saying, oh, she's a strong woman. Like, you never say he's a strong man. It's kind of that unconscious bias when someone is female, I think, is ingrained. And I don't think people do it in a bad way. They just don't think about it. But that's the problem. They just don't think about it. It has to be a big change in mindset. And I think the second thing I would say was just for companies who want to be a part of this to be more controversial and more proactive. So, you know, highlight how many women are in senior management. If it's not the number you want, how are you going to get there? So just without having to report gender pay gap, for example, because you're required to do so, just take a proactive approach, you know, own up to what's not working and talk about how you're going to change it.
Yeah, I completely agree. A real focus on the action. And alongside that, you're very passionate about mentoring. Can you share some of your experiences?
Yeah, I think I would say I'm passionate about mentoring because I don't think I ever had a mentor that I really looked up to. And again, I have this discussion with all the women I've worked with, and we all had the same problem where we just didn't have anyone that we would say, oh, wow, that's inspiring. That's who I want to be. I think mentoring had become more stressful, or, you know, finding a mentor or a company assigning you one, and, you know, you having to arrange a meeting and catch up and prepare your questions ahead of time. It just wasn't an easy relationship. I think a mentor should be, you know, you could call them up without hesitation, send them a WhatsApp, hey, I'm having trouble, can we meet for 5 minutes or talk for 5 minutes, and just, you know, talk them through the challenge you're going through. It doesn't have to be, let's talk about where you want to be in your career 5 years from now. It should be an easy, like a big sister kind of relationship. So I think that's why we need to be more natural about it. And I think, you know, the stigma of having a powerful woman guiding you the way maybe is not the best, but having a real person, maybe who has a family, you know, who's had troubles balancing childcare, or, you know, who's had troubles talking about pay, like most of us have, just talking to you honestly about that, not really about how it feels to be the go-getter and to be the big boss kind of thing.
Because, you know, in a way, that puts the sort of false pressure back onto it, doesn't it? Like, it's almost like the superwoman complex.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I always found was so unattainable, and I didn't want to be that superwoman, you know? And I really relate to that when you say, well, you know, who were sort of our mentors, who could we...
Yeah.
And there were a number of incredibly powerful women around me, but women that I couldn't relate to, and I couldn't just pick up that phone to or say, well, can I have a quick second? So I think that is so important, that we are building that community and tribe. It doesn't have to be internal in your business. Like, I found my best, most strongest people that have supported me through some really difficult times, but also teeny tiny problems that I've had that, you know, I just need a quick one too. They've been from many different avenues in the industry. So yeah, I really enjoyed you sharing that.
I think with the superwoman, it's I was talking to my husband about this. I don't like that concept either. You know, why don't we have a relaxed woman?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be nice.
Yeah, why does she have to be superwoman to be on a level playing field? Because that's exhausting. That's not sustainable.
Yeah, exactly.
And it leads to burnout. And it leads to, you know, what I meant, sort of false expectations that aren't in line with everybody else on these women that are seen as powerful and at the top. And that's not fair, and it's asking more to be in the same seat as other people are in.
It's an unrealistic image of a woman that, you know, newcomers look up to.
Yeah.
Becomes unattainable.
When you were talking about, you know, the women's networks, the women's groups, which I am, you know, really active in, but I do understand your point, made me think of when people have said to me, oh, you just want it all, don't you, Nadia? Well, why not? Like, you wouldn't say, if I was a bloke, you wouldn't say to me, oh, you want it all. Like, why wouldn't I have it all? And why do we have to even talk about it like that? Yeah. What, being a mother and having a career? Like, that's barely anything.
That's
not all. Like, let's be for real. So, yeah, I was thinking that as you were talking. So, for our audience, they've learnt so much within this conversation, but if we can think of one thing that they can be doing to drive inclusion in all of their workplaces, what would you want people to be doing more of?
I think it should be more accountable, measurable steps. You know, people do goals. They love having goals and numbers. So it should be in the company statement or whatever they're doing. Just talk about what you've done in the last period, maybe it's the quarter, maybe it's the last year, in terms of inclusion and diversity. How are you talking to your existing employees about inclusion and diversity? Because some things could be okay to say, some things could not be. And talk to your employees about what they see in the workplace. Do they feel they see enough diversity? If not, then why not? So I think it should be a little less talk and a bit more action, and not just to, you know, tick a box, but to actually drive some change and, you know, have a number next to it.
Amazing. And Oya, thank you so much for joining us today. I've learned so much, and I've had such a brilliant conversation with you. I feel really energized having listened to your story and all the amazing work that you're doing and what more we can do to drive this. So thank you for joining us on FinTech's DEI Discussions. Let's listen, let's learn, let's walk the talk.